Joining us right now on Caramel Jazz and Blues Radio, and the For Locals Only show, is the host of the Live of the Jazz Cat show, Leroy Downs. Leroy?
Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's all yours, buddy.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Well, you know, every week there's jazz spans such a great line between young and the historians, and we got to talk to the guys that have done it and the cats that are out there doing it today, and this is one of those cats. John Ellis, how you doing, John?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Beautiful, man. You're in New York or are you in Brooklyn?
I'm in Brooklyn.
Okay. Well, Brooklyn always just happens to be like a big hub for a lot of jazz musicians.
That's for sure. More and more so.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got a quartet. You named it Double Wide, which would imply that you're four players with a big, fat sound.
Absolutely. I mean, Double Wide sort of has a lot of connotations. There's a giant bass sound in the music because there's actually a guy playing sousaphone named Matt Perrine. I actually think he's, you know, I hesitate to say this because I usually don't say this about anything, but I kind of think he's the best at this. I've never really heard anyone quite like him. And then there's an organ, which, you know, also can play the bass, so it's like a super wide kind of bass function going on. But then also, I mean, where I grew up in North Carolina, Double Wide was a particularly large trailer that people lived in. So it sort of has like a reference to a trailer also.
Well, you know, when folks are moving their houses on the freeways around here, you know, it's wide, low, double wide, big, you know, all references.
Exactly.
Large and sound, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Well, for those who don't know the sound of a sousaphone, and how does it sound, and how does it blend in with the sound of your tenor?
Well, sousaphone is the marching tuba. So anybody who's ever seen a halftime show at pretty much any kind of football game from high school to on up, usually they have a marching tuba there. It was invented by John Philip Sousa, who wrote tons of marches. Actually, my uncle was in a military band many years ago, and actually he played the flute part. He played the piccolo, and he had a saying that he used to say about John Philip Sousa that he said John Philip Sousa should have been strangled in his crib. But I think he got so tired of playing all those high piccolo parts. But I'm thankful to John Philip Sousa because he invented this crazy marching tuba. It kind of looks like a Dr. Seuss invention. It wraps around the person who's playing it, wraps around their body, and then the bell of it faces forward, kind of comes up over the shoulder and faces forward. And it's a big tuba sound. And the thing that's great about Matt is that he's really kind of a throwback because he's a guy who plays incredible acoustic bass. He plays electric bass, too, and he also plays the tuba. And that's a kind of classic New Orleans double because there's all the gigs in the clubs where you play the bass and then all the parades and functions, you know, funerals and things like that where you play the bass function on the tuba. So he's that guy. He's like an amazing bass playing tuba player. He's really amazing at playing the bass role, but on the tuba.
Yeah. You're listening to John Ellis right here on the show, Live with the Jazz Cat. I'm Leroy Downs on 1410 AM KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio, on the For Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. Well, you got a brand new disc called Dance Like There's No Tomorrow, which is your third for High End Records. From what I understand, you know, you're so confident about the players that you play with. You just mentioned Nat and Gary Versace's on the B3 and Jason Marcellus on drums. You all went into the studio without really ever having played together as a unit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wish I could take credit for all that confidence, but it would really be a lie to say I wasn't kind of worried. I wasn't actually worried in their abilities, but I was, like, not sure if the concept would work. I mean, the combination of sousaphone and organ and drums and saxophone is not something that I had any real model for. I wasn't, you know, I don't know of any records that have that particular instrumentation.
I don't either.
Which was kind of part of the fun of it, but it was a little wild. I mean, Jason, I've been playing with in various projects, in my projects and his, and We both played with his dad some in New Orleans. I mean, I've probably been playing with him for 15 years or something. So, you know, we have a good relationship. And actually, the whole idea of the project came from a gig that I did with Matt on tuba in the late 90s in New Orleans. And so I've known him for a long time, too. And Gary's someone I had known more recently since I moved to New York. And
right.
We had all played. I had played with everyone, but we hadn't all played together. So it was a little nerve-wracking.
But it came out right.
Oh man, I couldn't have predicted how good it would turn out. I really couldn't have.
Well, that's the beauty of faith in the music, man. You know, you put the right cats together, and you know you're gonna get something beautiful.
Yeah, and you know more than I ever could have hoped for. You know. My great goal as a band leader is to just sort of create some kind of environment where the guys can invent something that I never would have imagined, you know, just kind of get people together and facilitate something happening.
Well, that's important in this day and age to get new sounds out of the music. I mean, because so much has been done with, you know, your basic quartets. And, you know, there's a lot of us out here who are looking for new sounds in the music, and your band certainly creates that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I learned a lot from playing in Charlie Hunter's band for all those years, because it was really the first time that I can remember that I had this experience of playing with someone where there really wasn't a precedent for it. I mean, it seems like so often in jazz, you can really feel... almost burdened by the tradition. You know, I love the tradition of the music so much, and you find yourself in a situation where it's a real standard instrumentation and it's a real standard material, and what am I going to do? What am I going to do with this that I would really want to listen to and not, like, put on a Sonny Rollins record instead or like, a Dexter Gordon record instead? You know, like, so many of those records are so monumental to me. So not to say I wouldn't like to still do something with that kind of format, but it's fun to be in a situation where you don't have that. You're not constantly thinking about what the cast before you did. It's just you're just reacting to the sound in the moment, and there's a certain feeling of newness about the experience. Kind of that's really nice. I definitely felt that with Charlie a lot. It's like a guy playing the bass and the guitar, some kind of crazy hybrid instrument that he came up with. You know, it's just like, you know. Just trying to make music on the fly with that. It's really, really fun. Really great challenge and really fun.
Yeah, you're not shackled to the melody.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, many might say that jazz was started in New Orleans. What is your take on the New Orleans sound? What elements of that sound do you incorporate in your music? And which seem to be the dominant factors in the music that continue to develop from that region?
Yeah, I mean, obviously New Orleans is giant in the country's history.
Right.
I think you can't really escape the fact that it was a poor city, and it was a one of the main things that was traded there was slaves. And so I think that the link to Africa, to the African elements of American culture and American music, are the greatest there still because of that legacy. So it's really a fascinating place to spend a lot of time. I mean, my first musical, like kind of formative musical experiences actually playing jazz were there. I mean, I moved there when I was probably 19. And I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like the elements are a certain spirit of inclusiveness, which I think you don't often find in other scenes. You definitely don't necessarily find it in New York. New York is a definitely kind of like a, you know, back off me, I'm doing my thing, you know, I'm making art. New Orleans is kind of like we're making music that's interwoven into the society. So there's a lot of music for functions, there's music for parties, music for dancing, music for funerals, music for celebrations, music to drink to, you know, music to meet members of the opposite sex to. I mean, it's a
hello.
Yeah, it's really like that. And there's a certain thing of like playing music that feels warm, that feels like there's a camaraderie with the musicians, like a music that invites other musicians into play and that invites the audience in. And you know, I've always been attracted to you know, music that could be challenging and that could be really interesting, but that could also somehow have a warm spirit too. And
yeah.
I feel like that's a big part of what I think about when I think about New Orleans music.
You're listening to one of the great cats in the music, John Ellis, on the show live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM, KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio, on the Four Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. You know, one of the distinct functions of jazz music back in the day is that it was social. You know, like we mentioned, people not only went to see and hear the music, they also used to dance to it. You know, when you generally think of different regions of the country, you might say the West Coast is cool and laid back. You know, the East Coast is straight ahead, you know, the bebop center. And with New Orleans, like you said, there's this history, and the music is celebrated by the people. I mean, you make sure that that celebration exists in your compositions.
Well, I definitely do my best. I mean, the title of the record is Dance Like There's No Tomorrow. And it's definitely not, I think sometimes people, you know, there's a lot of things people think about nowadays when they think about dance music. So it's definitely not, I mean, it's very acoustic sound, and there's definitely some things in there that are challenging. But all of the titles of the songs and all the kind of metaphor behind the songs was all sort of had some kind of dance, some sort of idea of dance and
yeah.
and celebration.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I've never descended on Crescent City, so I didn't experience the love, the sorrow, or the resurrection of a part of a country so prominently known for its contribution to the music. Which of these three distinct eras in time deeply affect your music the most, or do they all touch on it a little bit?
Man, absolutely all of them. You got to go, man. You got to go.
I know.
To get you down there for the festival. My most formative musical experiences, I grew up in North Carolina, but my most formative musical experiences were in New Orleans. And I moved there in 1993. And I was there for about 4 years, and then I was back again, and I taught school there the 99-2000 school year. And I've tried to be there at like two or three times a year ever since I lived there, even though I've been in New York now for a little more than 10 years. And, I had a lot of real close friends, and you know, some of the clubs that had given me some of my first opportunities, obviously dramatically impacted by the
sure.
by the storm. It's been really something to feel such a part of that, but also feel kind of distanced from it, and
yeah.
to get the chance to get to go back and sort of see how resilient the place has been. And there's no question that there's a lot of people who were displaced and who have had a really hard time getting back, or else they got so set up somewhere else that it doesn't make sense for them. And the loss is so deep, it's hard to talk about. I mean, I know Jason Marsalis was just up here, and we played a little together, and he was also playing with Michael White. And Michael White had all his old instruments, but he was also quite a historian, so he had all kinds of, you know, jelly roll manuscripts and really like kind of national treasures that were lost. So the loss is huge, and that's a big part of the title of this thing, Dance Like There's No Tomorrow. And I always felt like New Orleans knew how to celebrate for the moment, and that experience definitely can give you that feeling of you never know what tomorrow might bring. You know?
That is absolutely true. You know, it takes so much strength and courage to persevere in the face of such adverse circumstances. I mean, so many people, like you said, were displaced by the disaster, and different musicians ended up all over the country. I mean, we spoke with Adonis Rose not too long ago, who's in Texas now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that Branford Marsalis and Harry Connick are working on the development of this musician's village down there. Have you seen or heard musically about how the growth of this development is happening?
You know, I've only talked to a few people about that. It seems like something people are really excited about. I think there's a trumpet player, Andrew Mayhem, has a house in there, someone I used to play with some. You know, I'm not sure. I know that there's quite a few different kind of exciting development projects that are going on down there. I would like to know more about what's going on in Musicians Village. I've been there, I've been there maybe four, five times now since the storm, but I haven't managed to get in to see what's going on in the Musicians Village yet.
Yeah. You know, I also know so many musicians that are sons of preachers. I mean, it's uncanny. You know, you're obviously surrounded by the music in church, but at what point did you take your first step toward jazz music?
You know, that really came through the fact that in North Carolina, where I grew up, there's a performing arts school called the North Carolina School of the Arts. And my brother went there before me. I went there in 89. He went there in 87, my older brother. And he's an incredible artist. He's gotten real famous now here in New York, and he's always got these big shows and things happening. But he's always been really musical, and he had a roommate who was a jazz drummer who was really getting interested in jazz then, you know, so, you know, 87, I guess I was 13, 14 years old. And his roommate was the one that first kind of introduced me to, you know, Monk Records. That was also a time when, you know, Monk and Coltrane, that was also a time when, you know, pre-Lincoln Center, Wynton was touring with a septet. Ellis had basically just started or was about to start the program at University of New Orleans. And Wynton was talking to young musicians around the country about the fact that his dad was starting a school. And so he had influenced my brother's roommate, this guy Jeff Clapp. And then Jeff consequently influenced me. He sort of passed along a lot of the information that he was getting and definitely mostly just records and things to check out. And it was around that time that I actually heard Harry Connick Jr. for the first time. That was like before Harry met Sally. He was playing, he was touring, I think it was Duo with Ben Wolfe. And went to hear him and talked to him backstage, talked a lot to Todd Williams, who was Wynton's tenor player at the time. And I remember Todd really took the time with me to sit down, and he made a list of all the records that were really influential, things I should check out. And that was kind of the beginning of it. I started going and buying these records, and I didn't know the first thing, but I was just trying to figure out by ear what was going on.
Yeah, that's great when musicians see that, man, and they take you in and they share that lineage with you and bring you up, and look what happens, man.
So important. I mean, it's so important. It's a long history of musicians doing that, and I feel really, really lucky that those guys were so great to me when I was 15, you know.
Yeah, you're listening to John Ellis on the show Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM, KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio. My name is Leroy Downs, and the show is on the Four Locals Only show with Gary Hamada. Well, you know you've been touring with the band for your new album. I mean, where is the schedule going to take you next, and are you also filling your schedule with sideman gigs? Are you doing both at the same time, or are you just doing your band?
Yeah, I mean, it would be great to get to the point where I felt like I could do my own band and not do the other stuff, but I'm definitely not there yet. You know, also on the other hand, I get so much. I feel like one of the great reasons to be in a place like New York is that there's so many different musical personalities here and people with different musical influences, and it's so great for your evolution to get a chance to play all these different kinds of music with all these great writers. And so, you know, there's a side of me, as much as I want to do my own stuff, I wonder if I wouldn't feel like I was missing out a little bit, because there's parts of things that I'd like to do and things that I can do that I don't always end up doing in my own stuff as much. So, you know, I don't know. But we're traveling to, the Double Wide is playing in Toledo on the 15th for the Art Tatum Jazz Festival, the 15th of June. And then we're actually playing in July. We have something for the Brooklyn Museum on July 19th. And the 23rd, we're playing in Hoboken for St. Anne's Feast. And then in August, we actually have a little tour a little bit closer to you. We're playing in Northern California. We're playing at Kumbwa, actually on July 31st. And then August 1st and 2nd, we're at Moody's Bistro. And then the 3rd, we're playing the Boom Boom Room in San Francisco. And then on the 4th, we're playing Yoshi's in Oakland.
Oh, nice.
So, and then if it all comes together, we'll have a little tour of the South, too, late September, early October.
Well, people definitely are listening in the north right now. So all these people who are listening online right now can definitely go check out Kwumba's and the Yoshi gigs and everything you do up north, man, for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Well, you know, with the state of our economy, man, the present political power and the price of oil putting us all in the poorhouse, man, dance like there's no tomorrow could never be more prevalent in all kind of regards, man.
Sure.
Well, look, thanks for stopping in today and hanging with the Jazz Cat. The album is called Dance Like There's No Tomorrow, tenor player John Ellis. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much for having me, Leroy.
Absolutely, brother. You've been listening to the show Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio on the Four Locals Only Show with Mr. Gary Hamada.